Hey everyone, welcome to Just Mental Health with Steph and Em, the podcast where we discuss mental health from a social justice lens. I'm Emily.
And I'm Stephanie. A quick disclaimer before we get started. We are mental health professionals, but this is not to be taken as professional advice.
We are also aware that our privilege may cloud our perspective on some topics, and we not only welcome, but encourage you to message us with criticism and correction. Let's get started. Okay, so our small business shout out is my friend and neighbor, Paul M. Banks. He wrote a little blurb, so I'm just going to read his blurb. Paul M. Banks is the owner and manager of thesportsbank.net, a Chicago-based news publishing platform specializing in sports, sociopolitical, and cultural content. He's also the SEO and SERP expert for any of our listeners seeking to improve the Google ranking of their business. His new book, Transatlantic Passage, How the English Premier League Redefined Soccer in America, was just released, coinciding with the European Championships and the United States' recent triumph in the Nations League. Our guest today is really excited about this small business. Alex Kuhn of ESPN Radio said, "Whether you're a fan of international soccer or not, Transatlantic Passage is a compelling intersection of sports culture and how big money geopolitics drive both. There's a chapter here for everybody, including a very powerful one on the sport embracing the Black Lives Matter movement. Transatlantic Passage is available at eckhartspress.com. This is the second book from Paul M. Banks, a Fulbright scholar in media studies. His first book, No, I Can't Get You Tickets, Lessons Learned from a Life in Sports Media, went from No, I Can't Get You Tickets, colon, Lessons Learned from the inside joke with Stephanie and me, because I love naming our podcast episodes with colons. Went from general interest to an assigned textbook in journalism courses in the SUNY State University of New York system. You can find it on Amazon. Yay! So definitely check that out if you are interested. And like I said, he's a friend and he lives in my building and he's super cool.
That's awesome. That's a really impressive blurb of a lot of stuff he's done, and yeah, I like the book title.
I know, I like the punctuation.
Well, so we have a really really cool guest with us today. Trey is here. Trey is a community journalist for the Daily Herald in Chicago, and you can follow him on Twitter at Trey Arline or on Instagram at G's Do G Things. And both of those will be tagged on our Instagram so that you can follow them and check him out there. So welcome. Thanks for being on the show with us, Trey.
Yeah, thank you guys. I know Emily saw me like pretty much freak out when I heard about soccer. I'm pretty sure both of you know, like, I'm a huge, huge passionate fan of soccer. I always have been. I've lived in Europe most of my life. I follow it almost like to a T. I understand, like, you know, the geopolitical influence of soccer still to this day. The fact that the men's team are getting better and it's starting to really influence the game. So that's why I was freaking out about it, because it's not only becoming like a big thing here, but it's also becoming like a statement of like who people are individually. It's just like on a perspective of race and sex. And I'm glad that more and more people are starting to like think bigger about it. So, you know, that's why I had the reaction I did.
So. Well, that's perfect then. That was good timing to put that small business shout out with you, because I'll check that out. Yeah. So, but you're actually here today not to talk about soccer, even though you probably could. you're here to talk about the culture in video games and with gaming, especially like in regards to like the sexism and misogyny. So can you just tell us a little bit about, like, first of all, how long you've been gaming, what kind of games you like to play, and what that being involved in that culture and that experience has been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, the first time I even touched a video game, I think I was about 5 years old. I was just moved to this city in Turkey called Izmir, because my for those that aren't familiar with it, it's like a kind of like a mid-sized city in Turkey. My father was in the United States Air Force for more than 20 years. That was the first time I ever set foot on a plane was moving there. Like, that was my first real experience of like military lifestyle. So, you know, having like a little slice of something that just reminded me of, you know, home in America and stuff like that. The first video game I ever played was Crash Bandicoot, actually.
Yeah.
It was like a whole lot of 90s babies remember that. And I'm glad
you've never played that.
I am mostly going to be learning today. I don't know anything about video games.
Oh my god,
that's fair.
I'm missing out. Fair. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's coming back too, which is, you know, a really cool thing, and more and more people are starting.
What is it called?
Crash Bandicoot.
Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah. yeah, it was like a PlayStation exclusive. Like at the time, it was like a platformer, and it was kind of like their answer to. It was PlayStation's answer to Mario Kart, to Mario, mm-hmm. because they didn't really have like a mascot for the PlayStation console at the time when they first made it. So they were just like, oh, fuck it, let's just put something together. And, you know, that's what it came to be. And it was a really popular game for a long time. It still surprisingly is. And, you know, that's kind of more or less what has carried over into like other video games I play now, like the Uncharted franchise, which is also made by the same creators, Naughty Dog, The Last of Us, which is probably the greatest video game I've ever played in my life. You know, Assassin's Creed. I play first person shooters like, you know, Battlefield, Call of Duty, strategy games when I can, role playing games and stuff like that. I've owned hundreds of games, thousands of games, like over the course of my life. You know, it was just always a bit of fun. It was always just a good way to escape, see a good story. Even in certain games, you probably could learn some things about certain world events. You know, like it really can. You know, stimulate you in more ways than one, just like, you know, a movie or a song can do. So that's why I really love playing video games.
Yeah. So how many hours would you say you might put into playing video games on a weekly basis?
I mean, you know, like when I had, you know, significant downtime, like, you know, and college and stuff like that, I'd probably put in like at least 20, but light work. But,
I thought it was gonna be more. Yeah, that's nothing. No.
I mean, in like my earlier days of college, I could put in like 40. Like, it almost was like a job to me at a certain point. And nowadays, I mean, I'll make it around 15. I'll make time for more games if I actually get really into it. Like The Last of Us Part Two, that was the first game I actually, like, in my professional career, actually, like, literally took a I almost considered taking a day off just to play through the game. But yeah, it was something that I had really been anticipating for a long time. It was just like everything I did in that exact moment, I was just like, I gotta play this. But I mean, I've say I'd probably at this point, it's about 15 or at least 15 or so hours a week, just depending on what it is and what I'm doing.
So Yeah. So you're a hobbyist. That's a, you know, that is something that you do as a hobby in your downtime, something you really enjoy. And so since you, and you've been doing it for so long, you know, you've seen firsthand the way, I guess, video games have changed from when you were six, especially, or like in the 90s to now, just not only as far as like graphics and gameplay and storyline and everything, they've gotten better, like the same with movies, but in the community around it, because now people are gaming online and streaming and connecting with each other through those platforms.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like I keep telling myself I'm going to make like, you know, a Twitch account and start like, you know, I don't want to become ninja or anything like that, but it's something that is, you know, really kind of special in terms of just like people being able to kind of like find community and people enjoying games and watching certain things unfold. I mean, hell, yeah, Amazon bought them a few years ago because for like $1 billion, something like that. You can easily make millions just Twitch streaming. I think Ninja, he's like a Fortnite streamer. I think he, I might have to look this up as far as like his revenue, but he makes, I think, at least 5 million or so a year.
A year?
Yeah. Just from like playing Fortnite.
Wow. I'm changing my job. That's amazing. I mean, I knew that people made a lot of money doing that, but
I didn't know you could make
money. Oh yeah. I mean, you can, I mean, it's basically just like this. I mean, you know, you have your sponsors, you have people that will, you know, put money into whatever you're selling and whatever it is that, you know, you may be doing. You know, people on Twitch can donate to you. People can pay, you know, pay to say certain things. They can pay you to play a certain game if they want you to. Oh, I just looked it up. He makes $95,000 per month just streaming on Twitch.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, you can make bank if, you know, but it depends on like everything else, like influence, like all other influencer culture that we're currently living in now.
Just right.
You know, who your audience is, how much content you create, what kind of content you're creating, how you market yourself. Just really being good at your craft can really make a difference in terms of just like building that audience to kind of make the money that he does.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
And so you very, you know, clearly have a passion for gaming, and it's something you really enjoy and get a lot of fulfillment from. And you've also expressed that you find some of the culture to be problematic.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I always found it, but I think as I got older, I just started to notice more signs of it. So yeah, I do.
What kind? Yeah. Sorry, I think we're going to ask the same question.
I mean, what kind can, I mean,
all of them?
Yeah, all of, like, yes, all of it. We could make like a whole separate podcast about just like not even just sexism in the industry, just like every other ism you can think of. Mm-hmm. It's really gross. I will say that it is problematic that more people just inherently push back on it and don't want to hear it, because it feels more like you know, people are just willing to not really kind of examine or really look at themselves in terms of their own behavior. But to me, I still believe that in and of itself, that's just how the gaming industry was just born inadvertently. And it's just part of, like, people are starting to like now break that stigma and think of it terms of it, of games being just for everyone, not for just themselves.
Yeah. So when you say that was how it was built. What do you mean? Like, can you give us, can you talk about that a little bit more?
I forgot the specific study that it happened to, but like in video games infancy, around the 70s or 80s or something like that, gaming was actually not really, you know, set in stone as far as like who it would appeal to. And they pretty much just, you know, decided on a whim that they would market it more to boys. They actually had a chance to market it more to girls, as like in the beginning, either more predominantly towards women or just equally. But they figured, you know, like since technology is such a male dominated industry anyway, that it would make more sense for them to appeal to who they think would be buying certain things like this. And so video games, since their infancy, have catered to the male gaze, like almost exclusively. You know, you've got games like, you know, Grand Theft Auto, where you not only have never had like a female protagonist, but women are either sexual objects, murder fodder, or they are just complete caricatures of other women and just like extreme absurdities to the where they're like, you know, just either psychopathic or, sorry, might be ableist language here. So they're either hyper-violent, hyper-sexual, or just never really matter in the context of those games. Like, in that game, and like those games really only, like, that game started like 20 years ago.
Like, yeah.
Like, they still portray women that way.
It, right.
And, you know, like, just the nature and just the thought of having female characters in a video game has always just been not really done as well as it should be. I mean, even now, like, one of my favorite video game series is the Assassin's Creed franchise. It just came out that one of the creative directors of it, or the primary creative director of the franchise, basically tried to sideline women characters as much as he possibly could. And like, because I remember this game called Syndicate was supposed to have this male character and a female character, but they were brothers and they were supposed to get co-equal screen time, and they didn't. They gave it more to the male character. Assassin's Creed Origins was supposed to kill off its main male character and make the female character and like the character that you'd play for the rest of the game, but they didn't do that. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which I've been playing a lot of lately, was supposed to only have one sole female protagonist in it, but they shoehorned and forced a male protagonist in it towards the end of development for whatever reason. Yeah, so they, and what was funny is that the guy actually ended up getting fired because he was a manipulative douchebag that was, you know, lying about his marital status and basically just like, you know, just not only sleeping around, but he was also like coercing and threatening other women in the workplace to do what he wanted them to
Wow, do. That's such a surprise. A man that doesn't want female characters in his game is a misogynistic asshole. I never would have put those two things together.
No, it's like, it escapes me, right? But, you know, like, that's just emblematic of the fact that it's not only something that you see just straightforward in the video game itself, it's something that is
behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, up to the very top, like, it's everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they've made by men for men, like in every step of the way, it's just male dominated, like the behind the scenes, the game itself, the targeted audience.
Yeah, and there's those, well, you know, like there's that meme of like female armor, quote unquote, you know, and like for those games, the more fantasy games where it's like the female characters are wearing armor, if you can call it that, that is extremely sexualized and not practical at all. Like, so sort of like with female superheroes too. But kind of like that just drives the point home. Like, there's in real life, there's no such thing as female armor. There's just armor that you that people wear. And but in the video games, it's the female characters are very much made to be mostly made to be hypersexualized. And of course, who is that for? It's for, you know, heterosexual men. Those are the ones that are trying to attract to play the game. So that makes sense, especially in like the advertisements and the trailers for the games. You see a lot of that as well. You're like, gee, I wonder who the target audience is for this. When you've got a female character who's very well endowed, you know, and it's just like it, everything that she's wearing is revealing. And so yeah, it's blatant is what you're saying, but then it's also in the culture as far as how it started and how it's being developed.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Like I said, like it's all centered towards the male gaze because it's just become such a good old boys club for video game development over the years that people don't really examine anything else. And it's also just frustrating because when people either call it out or when a character is drawn to be, you know, less sexualized, it receives, you know, a sizable amount of backlash from the community in and of itself, as if they, you know, they're being personally attacked because they can't see a virtual character's tits. And it's, you know, it's absurd and ridiculous.
How dare they?
Yeah. It's, it feels like gaming has always just had some sickening sense of entitlement, and most gamers do. That's why I don't call myself a gamer. But it is just something that has just always just been there. I mean, Lara Croft now, you know, the Tomb Raider.
Oh my God, that's what I played when I was a kid, was Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Lara Croft was like my idol.
Yeah, and you know, like they like she might be the most famous. She is the most famous female video game character to ever like be created, and you know, like they didn't exactly hide her sex appeal whatsoever. Yeah. Sometimes you know it's tastefully done. Sometimes it wasn't. Most of the time it wasn't. But she like her longevity has always been kind of an exception to the rule, more or less. And because, you know, like there's like a whole new rebooted series of it now where she's, you know, like a perfectly dressed, normal looking woman. But, you know, you've got the first iterations of Lara Croft and Tomb Raider. You've got, you know, Angelina Jolie's sex appeal in her movies when she was making movies. You know, like female characters, even if they're protagonists, have always been catering to the male gaze as much as possible. I don't really feel like there are characters that sometimes kind of break that norm. Like this one video game I love called Horizon Zero Dawn has a main character that's a woman, and she's, you know, fairly attractive without needing to look, you know, like like a cosplay model. Mm-hmm. But you almost never see women that are having thoughts, you know, either independent of men, either independent of you know, thinking of serving someone else, either thinking of, you know, any sense of agency or urgency of their own. It's, you know, it's just kind of, it's blatant, But the more people kind of talk about it, the more people kind of just get very hostile towards it. I mean, we could talk about Gamergate. I don't know if you guys know anything about that.
No, I don't.
Gamergate came out such a long time ago, and it was just like such a fucking shit show. But Gamergate was an attempt by some feminists, some who played video games, some who did not, to kind of lay out the issues with video game design and video game culture and making it and consuming it. And like, some of these women faced so many rape and death threats over it, like over the course of a few years, that it was just, you know, really just disturbing to watch. And I feel like, people took it seriously enough to the point where video games started to change for the better, but it's still a huge problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I do remember that now, because like, how ironic is it, like, to say, hey, you know, there's a problem with sexism and misogyny in video game culture, and we want to call it out and we want to change it, and then to receive rape threats.
Right.
Like, you're proving the point. Mm-hmm. You are proving the point that it's not a safe place for women.
And that's what keeps things status quo. That's mm-hmm. why people don't push to change things, because then they don't feel safe. They don't, you know, that they get that backlash, and then things just stay as they are.
Yeah. And I mean, even girls, and I want to, like, you know, catch things up to speed as far as like modern day gaming goes. Most gamers now are women. Like, I think 52% of people that play video games are now women. So it's not like girls do not play them anymore. And, you know, people would be like, oh, well, they just probably play, like, you know, fucking Animal Crossing or something.
Right.
Like that. No, like, I've played with plenty of women in like Rainbow Six and Call of Duty and shit. They'll kick my ass and we'll call it a day. Like, mm-hmm. women play video games. You just don't know it most of the time. Like, okay, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I mean, that's a really interesting point. And you were probably going to get to this, so I don't want to step over that. But I've heard people say that most of the time when they're women and they're gaming, they, you know, use like a pseudonym that's either a male name or androgynous of some sort. And they never, like, they won't speak, you know, through the mic or anything, so nobody can hear their voice. They won't show themselves to kind of hide the fact that they're women, so that they don't receive those comments from people.
Yeah, that's absolutely a thing. I think, yeah, I just looked it up, like 60% of women that play video games online usually hide their identity to avoid any form of harassment. It's, you know, like, they don't want to hear all those fucking, you know, kitchen comments and bullshit. They don't want to hear or have guys come on to them for whatever reason. They don't want to get endlessly griefed or harassed by people for being simply women. They, you know, just never make their presence known, because, like you said, they feel like they don't belong here, even though, like, more and more of them are starting to play video games. And, you know, like, that's... it's just weird that, I'm sorry, is there your right stuff? Are you all right, Emily?
Oh, I was just clearing my throat. Oh. I muted myself because I didn't, sorry about that. Oh, my
bad. Yeah, like, we're listening intently. Like.
Yeah, it's like, for as much as there's been like strides to make more inclusive characters, whether it's, you know, more games are letting you create characters now. I mean, hell, there's a video game called Cyberpunk 2077 that let you make a transgender character if you wanted. Hmm. But, like, a lot of people just select what they believe is the default for games, and that's just, you know, men, primarily white men, but it's still just something that they feel like they get othered for simply just playing video games.
And I will say, I mean, like I said, this is going to be one of those episodes where I'm definitely learning more than I'm sharing. I just assumed the vast majority were men. That was, you know, my own ignorance, but that's interesting that over half are women. And given the culture, that makes sense that they have to kind of hide the fact that they're women, you know, out of fear of facing that harassment, like their online safety. And even like, you know, like cyber stalking or like stuff like that. Like, I'm sure that's a thing too.
Yeah, it definitely is. So, I mean, I give, you know, all the props in the world to, like, you know, women that are not afraid to, you know, show their face and just really kind of be out there in the culture, like whether they Twitch stream or what have you. Because, you know, like, there are a sizable amount of women who do that also, not even just selling their sex appeal in the way that some men assume that they do, but there are a lot of, you know, women in gaming culture and, you know, so-called nerd culture or whatever that really like a lot of certain things and still need to feel like they have to kind of justify their presence in a certain space.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that needs to be necessary.
Right. Like, you can just like it because you like it and you don't have to know everything about it. Right. Like, it's like that meme about women getting quizzed anytime they say they like something. Like, if you say, oh, I like Pink Floyd, it's like, well, name every song ever and name every member of the band and give me their birth dates and their favorite color and all this stuff. And you're like, shit, I just like Pink Floyd. Like, but yeah, so it's that sort of like, well, you're not a real nerd. You're not a real fan or a real gamer because you're not as intense about it as I am.
Yeah, and that leads to, you know, the trope of the quote-unquote gamer girl, which is, you know, another thing centered on the male gaze where it's just like, oh, I love video games and I let my man just do whatever he wants without being a totally absent-minded man-child. Aren't I the best girlfriend ever? But, you know, like, that part is just something that is sadly a thing that just lingers over gaming culture. I mean, even professional fucking gamers that play, like, you know, Overwatch and things like that, like, I think, like, all of the women on this particular team had to, like, quit because they had to face so much exhausting harassment online from like other people. Sometimes even other people on like other esports teams, you know, harass and may assault like other female colleagues that are their own. So it's not something that is only online. It's also something that people have to deal with in real life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. You go ahead, Emily.
I was going to, you go ahead. I was going to shift to a different.
Oh, okay. I was just going to kind of talk about what you had said earlier, Trey, about like some of these games were, there were supposed to be more prominent female characters, female leads in there. And that was kind of pushed away and, you know, replaced with more male leads or more story time for the male leads. And it's interesting because I don't know if there's like a theory or a term for this, but it reminds me of a similar thing with a lot of movies that, you know, why do men not want to watch, and men in general not want to watch movies where there's a female lead, where she's the protagonist, because she, you know, or she's like either a strong female lead or like in an action movie, or it's just a movie about a woman. Why don't men want to watch those movies? And somebody, I read this article and I was looking for it. Now I can't find it, of course, but it was saying because of, you know, men have a hard time relating to women and seeing a woman's story as something that they could relate to, as something that they would ever have to experience or go through. But women, because we are so used to everything sort of being male dominated and geared towards men, that we can watch movies, tons of movies with male leads in them, and relate to those male leads. And so it's like the perspective change. And I didn't know if that was sort of what was going on with in like video games, if that guys won't play video games where there's a female lead as much for the same reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you even have to just think of like, you know, even classic video games like, you know, Mario or The Legend of Zelda. Like, what are their specific goals? What has Mario's specific goal always been?
Yeah, to save Peach.
Yeah. What is, I don't know if you've ever played Legend of Zelda before. Mm-hmm. Who does Link always have to save?
Zelda.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, you know, damsel in distress kinds of things where women are at the hapless mercy of the antagonist, where, you know, the strong male character has to basically, you know, get strong enough to save them, has been a trope in video games since they've been around. A lot of people, and, you know, most visually stimulating video games that are bigger budgets these days are almost escapist power fantasies, male escapist power fantasies. And when you kind of take away the equation of the men being in the driver's seat for things that are supposed to be big events or big blockbuster type of adventures that they're supposed to be experiencing, they feel as if, you know, they're lesser, or that this is not a space for them to be in because it's not exclusively catering to their whims and their desires. And like, even, you know, like the game I was just telling you about, The Last of Us, it like the first game had a protagonist, Joel Miller, who had lost his daughter in the midst of this viral apocalypse. And yeah, I know viral apocalypse is not something we want to hear happening right now, but it's a fantastic game. And he just, you know, survived for 20 years by doing, you know, less than ethical things over the course of his life. And later on, he, you know, met a small girl that kind of made him feel like, you know, a part of his life was missing is now complete, because his daughter died when everything was happening. And in the second game, people were introduced to another female character that, spoiler alert, killed Joel, because Joel had killed a litany of people and done a whole host of terrible things throughout that game over the course of a few years. And people, when they saw what this character Abby would look like, just flew into a frenzy. It's like, they, like, Abby is a really, really strong, like, physically, like, muscular woman, and she just got so much hate for just looking the way that she does. Like, people were saying all sorts of sexist and transphobic things. They were sending, you know, death threats not only to the staff of the game, but to the voice actress of the character, just saying all of these absurd, fucked up, ridiculous things about, like, oh, you killed, you know, my fictional dad, how dare you? And you know, like, it's still backlash that still carries with the game even to this day. It was still a critically and commercially successful video game, but it's still something that, again, just reinforces, like, who certain gamers think belongs in this space and who they think don't. They were willing to see through the lens of a man who lived by less than perfect means and humanized that, but they didn't see a woman who lived through less than perfect means and immediately demonized her for it.
That's a really good point. I mean, that's a really good way of putting that. And yeah, I mean, that just kind of goes back to what I was saying, like the being able to relate to a man easier. Women can relate to women and women can relate to men because we've been forced to. Forced to adapt and live in a male world.
You know what? I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you go ahead.
It's like, and you're probably not going to play the fucking game at any point, but it's like in the end of the game, like, I want people to really, really hear this part. Joel, the girl he was escorting across the United States to find, like, this cure for this virus, like, she was immune to it, and they were going to, like, reverse engineer some shit in her head because it got part of the virus in her head to probably find a cure for it. So he learned that she would probably die if this was, like, extracted from her body, like, she wouldn't survive the medical process. But in the midst of his grief and trying to, like, you know, quote unquote, save her, he murdered, like, an entire hospital worth of, like, resistance fighters. You have to actually play this part of the game. It's literally the end of the game. He kills hundreds of people, including, like, one of the doctors that was supposed to be operating on her. He breaks her out of the hospital and possibly almost, like, you know, dooms the human race as a result of that. But, you know, like, you come away from it when you actually, you know, play the entire game and go through that experience looking at Joel like, well, yeah, that's the right thing to do. Like, no, it wasn't. And so the character that I just told you about that later kills him, Abby, like, her father was the one that was supposed to be operating on Ellie, and he killed her. He killed him and, like, you know, the other hundreds of people that she probably cared about. And she caught up to him, got her revenge by killing him. And you basically just duke it out with these two people, with Ellie, who didn't know why she killed him, and Abby, who's just like, yeah, you fucking killed my dad and all my friends. But it's like, again, like, people were willing to give him, you know, benefit of the doubt for all of his grief, but not her. Mm-hmm. And what he did was arguably probably worse. Like, that's some sociopathic level shit right there to even just, like, consider doing that. But yeah, like, it's not a game where there are really any heroes in it. Everybody does, like, their own dirt, but people were willing to make her a villain in a world where there are any.
Right.
Yeah, the women getting much more harshly criticized for doing something way less bad.
Yeah. So, like, real life now.
Yeah, so pretty much.
And then you there are other isms, you said, right?
Yeah. Not racism, transphobia, racism, sexism. Homophobia, things like that,
mm-hmm.
very prevalent. Racism is kind of, I mean, it was a big deal, like, in its earlier days, but if there's a game that's racist, people will immediately call it out a lot faster than they would with sexism, because I feel like people are more, like, you can't hide certain things as effectively, like, in a racist way in a video game. Like, people will kind of take notice of it a lot quicker, but it is there. the racism when it comes to that is usually within other gamers themselves. But, you know, I can't control what people can and can't say, but it's still, you know, it's still a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Homophobia is still, you know, a big problem.
So it's less with the games themselves and more with the people playing?
I mean, it's still in games. I mean, I'm going to have to at least think of a few more racist, explicit examples, but it is there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But a lot of it is still more or less predominantly pushed on by, you know, people who play them.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that kind of goes along with the isms, but is a little different. And I've been thinking about this for a while, and now I have a chance to talk with someone about it who might know. So I don't play, well, I play video games, but not the different, more like puzzle games. But I watch, this is a weird thing about me, so I watch other people play video games that I'll never play. So I watch, you know, on YouTube and Twitch and stuff. And my favorite genre are the horror games. So one of the things that I've noticed that, it's a trope in film, but especially in video games when it comes to the horror genre, is this, it's so ableist and so so prejudiced and misinformed against people with mental illness, right? A typical horror video game setup is you play as main character and you throughout the gameplay realize that you were the one who killed your family. And because you have some psychotic disorder and you didn't take your pills and you start having these hallucinations and all this stuff and the guilt leads you, you know, on this journey. And then you finally realize what you've done and it's too late. And have you played any games like that?
Yeah, I was about to say, wait, are you describing Silent Hill 2?
That's like, but that, see, that's every every horror game. That's Silent Hill 2. And that's every single one of them. So... you know, it's like the twist, right? What's going on? What's the, are they being haunted? Is there something following them? No, it's just their guilt, or no, it's just the psychological trauma that they carry. And it's sort of like played up in the game as being like, oh, wow, people with mental illness are dangerous and scary. And they're the ones that kill their families. And it's always the trope. And like, I get that it's horror and there's a lot of stuff in horror that's horrible and not supposed to be, you know, politically correct or whatever, but it's just so prevalent. I see it in every storyline for these games.
It doesn't seem necessary to make it mental illness related.
Like, it doesn't
have the same storyline and the same premise without it actually being a result of a mental illness. And yeah, accurate.
Yeah. And it's been years since I played Silent Hill 2. I have to remember that in my nightmares, but it was at least in the end of that game. I do remember, I think he did kill his wife and it was more like his guilt was just kind of masking that. And
right.
Like all the monsters and the apparitions and enemies he was facing were all just put in his head as like weird manifestations of his own guilt, trying to like,
right. He blocked it out, you know, because yeah. The trauma was so bad. He was a family annihilator and the trauma was so bad that he blocked it out. And it's just like, can we come up with something else? Because could you imagine if you were someone with like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, which are often the ones that they, or dissociative identity disorder, they throw that right. around a lot as if it's so common, but you know, those are sort of the ones that they fall back on. What if you're someone that has that and you just want to, you want to play a horror video game and, oh, wow, look, the twist is this, the person with this disorder was,
it was him,
you were the villain the whole time. Like,
I mean, it is just like a really played out kind of trope, not only just in video games, but in just like horror in general. I mean, good horror films, I've noticed that usually good horror films usually have like an underlying message to them as far as like context in the real world. I mean, that's usually what there's like, what a lot of horror films are supposed to be. They're, a lot of them were like just statements on society,
mm-hmm.
you know, just played to an extremely graphic or terrifying extreme. But, you know, like, I think like, other genres of things, it just kind of, people kind of took the visual aesthetic of it and kind of ran with it for the wrong reasons. And I feel like that's definitely something that kind of bothers me as far as like where horror goes. I mean, surprisingly, The Last of Us Part Two is a horror game, but it doesn't really kind of play into that. It kind of just more or less plays into like humanity and society's failures to kind of adequately deal with the pandemic. Not gonna wood.
Yeah.
I mean, even as far as like accessibility and disability, that's another reason that I actually love The Last of Us Part Two, because they have a lot of you know, just ways of actually playing the game for like people with disabilities, like the way that you can control the game, look at the game. You know, they have options for blind people to play this game.
That's great. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Like they have like specific ways that you can like listen in on like different audio and visual cues to actually like play through it, like adequately to actually get through what you need to do. It's probably like, in terms of like disabilities, probably the most accessible video game like ever made, which I found really special.
That's awesome, because that's one of the things that I've heard a lot of people say, you know, one of the positives of video games is they are accessible typically for most people, because you know, you can play them in the comfort of your own home. You can set it up however you need to, and people with, maybe social anxiety or, you know, they're not really comfortable around other people, feel more comfortable socializing through a video game. Or, you know, maybe you can't get out and do a lot of things because of a physical illness or otherwise, and video games allow you to sort of experience those things. So I've heard that as being like, that's one of the benefits of them, is lots of people can play them. And then, so to know that, I guess The Last of Us 2 is sort of, it's great that they did that, and hopefully they're kind of paving the way for other video games to be even more accessible.
Yeah. It has been seen as like a huge gold standard that's been set for like accessible video games. That game is actually far more progressive than I actually give it credit for and even realize to this day. Like, one of the characters is actually like, they had like a small younger character named Lev, but his actual name, he's transgender, and the character's former name used to be Lily. And I mean, there was a huge fuss about just like, you know, dead naming her, dead naming him, as far as like how he was raised. But I was like, no, like, transgender people have to deal with, like, you know, shitty people that will do that, because this character was raised in like a cult, like a religious cult that kind of like rejected his identity. Mm-hmm. But this is like, you know, just yet another one of those things that gamers kind of pushed back on as far as like isms and things like that, because I don't think gaming is really ready for the stories that it thinks it's ready to tell.
Right. Right. Cause that's really that's, you know, the representation. Yeah. I mean, that stuff matters. And it's the same with like watching a movie or reading a book. When there are characters that are different than you and you start to relate to them and empathize with them, and find parts of their story that you're like, okay, maybe I don't know what it's like, you know, to be trans, but I have felt rejected by people I cared about before, and I can relate to that with that character. It expands sort of your understanding and acceptance of people. So that's great that there's, you know, those storylines and that representation out there, but you're also saying that there's still that pushback. Like it is when, you know, when it's with a female lead or something like that, when there's a trans person involved, there's still a hesitation for gamers maybe to accept that or to be really excited about a storyline like that.
Yeah. And I wouldn't even say hesitation. I don't want to say open hostility for like mm-hmm. everybody, but it always, it's more met with skepticism than anything else. But Lev's transgenderism was like a huge focal point and just like why he was the way that he was and why he rejected the cult in the first place. You know, because I feel like video games never really touch on like, or most media really kind of touch on like why cults may have people who break away from them and understanding who certain people are. I thought it was a really great way to kind of see that character's struggle and what it meant for him to basically just like, you know, try and leave his family behind to live the truth that he felt like he should be. And it was like a huge internal conflict for the other character, Abby, to kind of go through because she's taking somebody else under her wing in the same way that Joel did that for Ellie in the first game. And again, it's like people never really examined that part of her story because, you know, she hurt somebody that they care, that most gamers cared about.
You're still mad about it.
So, you know, like seeing, you know, the strong female lead character basically try to basically be the guardian protector of somebody else was a really cool thing to see happen for a game. And, you know, like I'm just happy that, you know, stories like that can be told, but I feel like more work needs to be done as mm-hmm. far as like getting it to be a more globally accepted thing.
Yeah. And hopefully with more of those stories being told and more game developers putting those storylines in and those characters in, it will get to that point. Cause again, the representation.
Talk about the Activision lawsuit, did I?
The what?
So Activision Blizzard, who are the publishers of Call of Duty and World of Warcraft, are getting their asses sued off because of a huge toxic workplace culture environment that's basically just like, they describe it as almost like a frat house because the guys are just like, you know, flagrantly sexist pigs. And, you know, I think they bullied one woman into killing herself.
Oh my gosh.
So, like, they had like all these exchange text messages and stuff about, like, you know, all the women that they get to brag about banging and stuff like that. And, you know, just making women feel as subhuman as possible in this work. Mm-hmm. Again, it's like something that at the very top is just something that's not gonna, you know, that people don't want to acknowledge should change. And again, like people need to remember, like, Call of Duty is like a huge thing.
Yeah, right. Both of them and World of Warcraft, those are huge games.
Those are two of like the only two I've heard of.
Like, even Emily's heard of them. That's how big they are.
Call of Duty is like, last checked, I think it's like a $25 billion gaming franchise. It's like one of the biggest, highest grossing like entertainment franchises ever. Like, that's including video games, movies, TV. Like,
wow,
makes a lot of money. Like, I think even the biggest entertainment franchise actually is surprisingly Pokemon.
Is it really? Actually, you know what? I believe that.
Yeah, as I've also heard of Pokemon.
Pikachu. Yeah, Pokemon.
Name another one.
That's the only one I know.
Oh my god. Yeah, I mean, everybody grew up with Pokemon, so it's kind of like.
Yeah, it's been around forever, and now. It's like never going to end. But and Pokemon's a great one. That's so wholesome. So like, yeah. That's a good one to end on. Well, at least the game is. I don't know anything about, you know, development or owners or anything, but the game Pokemon is very wholesome and yeah. Great for all ages. So,
yeah. So, you know, like, I don't feel like gaming is, if we're ending it now, like, I don't feel like gaming is completely hopeless. Like, you know, stories like that evolve every day, and more and more we're starting to see a lot of different games out there that, you know, have female leads or have leads that are people of color or other supporting characters of different genders and different races and stuff like that. People, like, even more women are starting to, like, you know, write and create video games a lot far more often than they used to. I mean, hell, my favorite video game franchise is the Uncharted franchise, and that game was actually written by a woman. So it's not a completely, like, dire situation. It is something that needs to change, and it is something that people need to kind of keep in mind as far as, like, what media they consume. But, you know, like, I feel like that's just more emblematic of us as a culture than really anything else.
Right. Like, we should be conscious of that for everything. And this is just another area.
Sounds like it's one of those things that's, like, very problematic, like, problematic history and still problematic, but there's push in the right direction, and it's going slowly but surely, and, you know, hopefully in time. It'll someday eventually get to where it needs to be.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest, for talking about this. This is not something I think that either of us would have chosen to, like, this is not a topic we would have been like, let's talk about video game culture, but it was really interesting. I mean, I learned a lot that I didn't know. Yeah.
I barely spoke because I was
like, I was just like blabbed on, so I was like, I'm surprised y'all didn't stop me more
often. No, you're our guest, that's why you're here.
Yeah. because we wanted to know. I mean, my knowledge of video games is very, very remedial, and so, you know, just to hear someone who's knowledgeable about them and has been, you know, like you said, you've been playing them for a long time. You've been in that culture for a while. You understand it. And so you're able to give us firsthand experience. And I really appreciate you sharing what you know with us.
Absolutely. So I'm really glad I got to, you know, be a part of the podcast and, you know, say a few words. So I'm glad I got to talk to you both again. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that's our show. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with friends and family. And if you have an Apple ID, please rate our podcast on the Apple Podcast app. Rate and review. We would really appreciate it.
And don't forget to follow the show's Instagram for updates on new episodes at Just Mental Health Podcast. That is with a period between each word. This is Steph.
And M.
And Trey.
Signing off. Thanks.
Bye.